I got the full literally. The press can confirm this. Call the Senate and say don't. Yeah, and are we? Hey, America, America, America. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, I was attempting President Joe Biden there, who is manifestly senile, and he brings to the fore an issue which is increasingly a problem in the United States, and that is gerontocracy. That is a country where elderly people are strongly overrepresented in political positions. And in this video, I want to look at the causes of gerontocracy, particularly in America. Why does gerontocracy happen? Before I do that, could you please subscribe? It really helps if you do that. Could you subscribe here? And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all of the spiciest and most based content, which I daren't put on YouTube, and where, if you want to, you can help me. If you like what I do, you can support me for the price of a pint of beer a month. But most of all, please do subscribe here on YouTube. Okay, back to the video. So, gerontocracy, the idea that elderly people become strongly overrepresented in positions of power. Why does it happen? Well, we have to distinguish between two kinds of gerontocracy: gerontocracy in general and gerontocracy in the United States. And it seems to me that gerontocracy in the United States is unfortunately built into the current system. At the moment, 65% of senators are over the age of 65. Now, obviously, 65% of American people are not over the age of 65. So this is demonstrating to you how strongly it's built in. Now, there are a number of reasons for that. The first is simply the electoral system in the United States combined with current sociological trends. The electoral system in the United States is based completely around public voting. So in order to become a candidate to even be a Republican or Democrat senator, you have to go through primaries, and the primaries are voted in by the general population. And older people are much more likely to vote. Why are older people more likely to vote? Well, first of all, you could argue they have been brought up in a more group-oriented society, in a less individually-oriented society. And so this means that they have a stronger sense of public duty, a stronger sense of civic duty, a stronger sense of participation in democracy and the importance of participation in democracy. That's the first thing. The second thing is that as people become older, they become more pro-social and more rule-following, higher in agreeableness and higher in conscientiousness. And people like that are more likely to engage in civic activities, to be interested in public goods, to sign petitions, and therefore are more likely to vote. So that's the first thing. And that has to be taken together with the fact that you have an increasingly divided society along sociological lines. As society becomes less united and more divided, it splinters into special interest groups, such as sexual orientation, such as gender, such as being young, or whatever it happens to be, where those people selfishly vote in their own interests rather than in the interests of society as a whole. Now, the result of that is that they will tend very strongly to vote not for the person whose policies are necessarily good for the society as a whole, but rather for the person whose policies are good for them, and also the person who is like them, who is similar to them, who is going through the same experiences as them. And this would imply that old people would be more likely to vote for other old people. And this may well be what is happening, and this would help to explain why in the last presidential election in 2020, the two final Democrat candidates were both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden were both relatively elderly, that there is this process whereby people are voting along identity politics lines. They identify as being older people, as being boomers or even older than that, and so they select old candidates. The second issue is perhaps a broader issue, which is we have to ask ourselves, who is it that ends up being a candidate? Now, what we have in America and in to varying degrees in other European countries is a clear meritocracy. You get to places on merit in a way that did not used to be the case. Yes, of course, it's not completely on merit, but it's more than was once the case, where a lot of people couldn't even read and didn't have a chance. So you have much less in the way of people going into politics out of a sense of noblesse oblige, out of a sense of obligation, out of a feeling that it's their duty because they're upper class to go into politics. Far more the case now that it's highly, highly competitive to get into politics, and so you get into politics by being absolutely the best at politics, by being extremely ruthless, extremely cunning, extremely ambitious. It is those kinds of people that will manage to get through and get to high political positions, as opposed to the way it used to be, which there was far less competition to get into politics. It was far less meritocratic, and therefore you would get much more in the way of upper class people with a sense of noblesse oblige and that sort of thing. So this selects for a certain type. What is that type? Well, the evidence is that it is people that are highly intelligent combined with subclinical psychopathic traits. If you look at a study by Felix Post, Creativity and Psychopathology, a study of 291 great men, then he shows this very clearly, that people that go into politics successfully are subclinical psychopaths on average, and therefore they will be power hungry, they will be paranoid, they will desire power. And so obviously, once lots of people like that have got power, they are going to hang on to it in a way that wouldn't have been the case in earlier generations, where there was a greater degree to which people went into politics because they were asked, where people went into politics because they were of the right family and there was a sense of obligation that they should do so. No. Now it is people that are subclinically psychopathic that are going to rise to the top in a meritocracy with clear cognitive stratification. And so you can expect those people, once they get into power, to hang on. And you can see this in the extreme examples at the individual level of the people that will get into power and hang on, refuse to leave. People like Tony Blair or Margaret Thatcher. Obviously, these people are going to be high in subclinical dictators. They're going to be high in subclinical psychopathic traits. Now, we have a system which means that it is going to be more so than was the case in the past. People like that, who managed to rise to the top of politics, and so consequently they will hang on and you end up with a gerontocracy. The next reason is simply damage to the younger generation. Now, one period in which means that the younger generation, which in evolutionary terms, the young Turks that have to fight with the old leader in order to attain power, are less able to do so, and so the older generation hangs on for longer. One way this can happen is war. So what happened in World War One was that about 8% of the men that went out to fight in England were killed, but it was about 12% or even more, 16% of the officers. The officers were overwhelmingly upper class and upper middle class. The people that would have been killed would have been the ones leading the men into danger, the men that were the bravest. In many ways, the best of the breed, the best of the ones that were high in subclinical psychopathology as well, taking risks, the best of the breed were killed. Consequently, by the time we get to World War II, you have a much older generation that is still in charge. You have someone like Winston Churchill, who becomes Prime Minister at nearly the age of 66. You have Neville Chamberlain, also elderly. Stanley Baldwin, also elderly. You have these older people that are running the country because the younger generation has been decimated. The best of the breed have been killed. And so it takes longer for that younger generation, which is less talented, to attain power. They have to basically wait because they don't have the political skill to usurp the older generation that is in power, because the best of the breed has been removed. And so you did have a gerontocracy round about the time of the 1930s, between the wars. Now, it may be that you have something similar now in America, because you have a generation in the form of the gerontocracy who has suffered, who maybe they fought in Vietnam, they've been brought up in a traditional and harsh fashion, a loving yet harsh fashion, which prepares you for life, which helps you to deal with adversity, which causes you to come up with coping strategies to cope with adversity, which gives you grit, which makes you a fighter, as compared to a younger generation, which has been brought up in a far more individually oriented society, concerned with equality and harm avoidance and their feelings not being being hurt, and basically a life that hasn't prepared them for the harshness of competition, a life that has been really relatively easy and non-competitive, in which they haven't had to come up with coping strategies to deal with adversity, because there's just been less adversity, a much less harsh environment. And so those people are simply less able to compete with the older generation, and so they are not able to displace them, and basically they haven't been brought up optimally to compete, and so they don't displace them, and so the older generation stay in for longer. And finally, we have to, it's a question of times of change versus times of stagnation. As a species, as a rule, age is associated with status, age is associated with wisdom, age is associated with stability. Women sexually select for age because it is associated with status. And so what you tend to find is that at times of crisis, we want stability, we want wisdom, and we will tend to look for people who are older. When things seem to stagnate and get boring, then the other thing we like order, but we also like disorder. We like a balance between the two. We like structure and order, but we also like excitement. And so when things get a bit stagnant and things haven't changed for a long time and then we get a bit bored, then we want excitement, and then we vote for something new and something interesting. And I think that's what happened with Barack Obama. You'd had two terms of rule by a relatively old Republican. Things were a bit, there was nothing wrong with the economy particularly. Things were a bit boring, a bit stable. So you vote for the excitement of a young, new and ethnic minority leader. Now, the opposite is the case. We've had a massive economic crisis, which we're still in the middle of. Things are unstable. Things are a problem. And so this militates in favour of voting for older people. You would expect older people to be voted for in times of crisis. You find the same thing in the UK when Theresa May emerged as leader during the crisis of Brexit. She replaced a leader that was about 12 years younger than her. And so this is Winston Churchill emerging as leader during World War II. Again, very elderly man. There is a time of crisis will militate in favour of that sort of thing. And so perhaps we are in a time of crisis, and this militates in favour of voting for older people. But this is not the first time in the US, this is not the first time that you get gerontocracies. You got a gerontocracy, for example, when the Soviet Union was beginning to fall apart and stagnate and nothing was going right and things weren't working. Then you had a series of elderly leaders, and then you had the feeling that there should be some excitement, and so they brought in a young leader, and then there was a coup and he was replaced by an elderly leader. This is the way things tend to operate. So those are the reasons, the key reasons, why we develop gerontocracies. So I hope this has been of interest, and goodbye. Before I continue with the red pills, I must quickly remind you of a white pill. Whatever disasters we are going to witness, the world will keep spinning because the conservative and the religious are having more children than the progressives, meaning that eventually all spiteful mutants will be bred out of the gene pool and society will function once again like it used to. You've obviously heard this argument before from me, and I've developed it in my book, The Past is Future Country, The Coming Conservative Revolution, with my co-author, Joe A. Rayner Hills. You should definitely read that book, but if you haven't got the time to read it, I can offer you a shortcut. There is, in fact, a very good summary of our core arguments available, which you can listen to in just under 20 minutes on Learjent.com. Learjent is a new app where you can read and listen to short summaries of all the key arguments of many based books. These are all under 25 minutes long, so you can finish the whole book while you're out and about, in the gym, or on your way to work. Now, you might have heard of some competitors with a similar offer, but the big difference is that you will never find my books or books as the bell curve on these platforms. Learjent, on the other hand, is a platform run by based people who specifically want you to know about my research and those of others like me. So go on to Learjent.com now and sign up my promo code TJH for a 10% discount.
Are you ready for the future of the West?